Welcome to the Alberta Wildlife Stories Podcast. I'd like to give a big shout out to our supporters Grizz Targets, Slayer Calls, C&D Archery, and Precision Edge Taxidermy. To find more info on these great people, be sure to check out the links in the description, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Thanks for listening. Join us on June 29th to July 1st for the first annual Alberta Wildlife Stories 3D shoot hosted at the Sherwood Park Archery Club in Central Alberta. The 3-day shoot will consist of 4 rounds, door prizes, vendors, a charity shoot-off, and much more, with all proceeds going to support the Sherwood Park Archery Club. To register, visit sherwoodparkarchery.com, and we hope to see you there. In case you missed it, we just announced the AlbertaWildlifeStories.com website along with the first issue of the Alberta Wildlife Stories e-magazine and audio magazine that features articles narrated by the authors themselves. We're so stoked to bring this project to you guys. Head over to the website, check it all out. There's more content there with blogs, news posts, and everything there. We can't wait to bring you the next issue already. Joining me today is the locally renowned Albertan, Chris Felt, owner and operator of the Archery Box Pro Shop. Chris has made his shop stand out with its backwoods cabin feel, equipped with a wood-burning fireplace. The Archery Box is sure to make you feel like you're at hunting camp while you get your hands on some world-class gear. Chris is a family man, father, husband, hard worker, and a hunter that has years of archery experience and knowledge to get you set up while you enjoy a cup of coffee at his shop. Without further ado, Chris, thanks for coming on the podcast, man. How are you doing tonight?
Good, and yourself? Thanks for having me, Aaron.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, doing good. Been a hectic weekend over here. I think you're just saying I was busy with the family and stuff there too, and everything you had going on.
Yeah, busy with the shop. And we hosted our first arrow building course this year that went great with huge success. So
that's awesome. So what were you doing for like the arrow building course? Just straight from bear shaft or?
No, we started with, I basically looked at it as every archer that comes through the doors where they had experience or no experience. I looked at it like it's somebody coming in asking right about arrows that had no idea. So we started off with looking at their bows, what draw weight, speed of their bows. We selected their arrow shafts. We selected if they wanted to shoot straight, helical. The reasons why you're shooting helical vanes or the reasons why you're shooting straight vanes. Then we stepped into FOC and how important it is and where people want to set their FOCs. And then we looked at spine alignment of arrows as well, knock tuning, spine alignment jigs and stuff like that. So they got a full understanding of leveling up their game of archery, like that last missing link of really dialing yourself in, especially for hunting season and broadhead tuning. Mm-hmm. I've really noticed in the last year that people, they don't have problems broadhead tuning, just the understanding. If they understand a bit more, their success rate for hunting would be so much greater, right?
Wow. Yeah, man, that's super cool. It is really cool to like, that's how you outline kind of that arrow building course, is that it's like that general, I think, like all encompassing with all the different factors, right? Because when you look at, you know, so many people focus so much on bow tuning, right? And I've come across so many friends that you're shooting with, and they're wondering why, you know, their arrow's wobbling like a pool noodle in the air or something like that, or they're not getting in a group they want. And like off the bat, people aren't thinking too much about their arrow or, you know, where they fall in that bell curve of like total arrow weight or whatever. And like you say, like how important that front of center weight is and all that stuff. So yeah, that is a huge thing for people to understand and to provide a little workshop and course to an arrow building like that, man. That's awesome to do that.
Yeah, no. And it's, you know, it's one of them steps that I, like I told all the guys and I tell everybody that comes to my shop. First of all, I love sharing the knowledge. The more I share the knowledge, I love everybody enjoying the sport. That's what keeps it growing.
Yeah.
But to essentially get your bow tuned, that the first step to tuning your bow, and I wouldn't even move into the step of tuning a bow unless you have a proper arrow selection.
Yeah, Like, and that, I couldn't agree with that more, because I've just sometimes I've seen people shooting things and you're like, man, like front of center way off, just way off in the field point weight and stuff like that too. But when you mentioned like broadhead tuning there, what were some of the main components when you were telling people, how to achieve a better tune for their broadheads?
One of the biggest things is knock tuning your spine alignment of your arrows to get your arrows to fly correct. In the last year, I noticed, and it's everybody that comes in, they're shooting arrows that haven't been spine aligned or they haven't knock tuned, and their arrows are shooting off. And as soon as we start looking into knock tuning, or I switch their arrow shafts out to a spine aligned arrow, their accuracy rate climbs up, and I just they light right their eyes just light right up. Now they go from a 6-inch group at 20 yards into a 2-inch group at 20 yards, and they're blowing, they're fletching off with the broadheads on their arrows, right? So just the little things that make the biggest difference. And some guys, they think it requires big investments into getting to these arrows, and nowadays it doesn't require a big investment to step up into these arrows that are spine aligned at all, right?
That was even, I think, just even, what was that, maybe 2 years ago that I actually just myself started doing some knock tuning and stuff like that, and got a little bit more comfortable with numbering all my arrows and kind of working with each one by one kind of thing. But
And I've watching all the YouTube videos. I'm one of them guys that'll sit down instead of watching TV, and I'll watch YouTube videos and to learn the knowledge. And I've watched these guys, they've built themselves spine aligning jigs. It doesn't take knock tuning out. Knock tuning is still one of the best steps to spine aligning, but it definitely speeds the process up with these little jigs they make that kind of you can get the flex of the arrow and you can feel where the spine is on your arrow, right?
Do you mind giving a quick encompass to what like spine aligning means for people that are listening that may not know?
So spine alignment is essentially spine align means the stiffest part of your arrow. You're going to find that, and you want in a compound bow, you want your arrow to flex down towards the shelf of your riser. And in a if you're finger shooting, if you're right or left-handed, you want that arrow to flex out around the riser. So I guess what it means is that stiffest part and the weakest part's going to belly down, and that's what they're talking about. And you want to get them firing exactly the same, deflecting exactly the same coming out of the riser of your bow.
Yeah, that makes sense 100%. It's a good way to explain it, because the more you can have all of them as close to the same as possible with like the least amount of variables as possible, the more consistent results you'll get. And yeah, I don't know. I find like even when you're getting into, say, like setting your pins or your sight or whatever, it's sometimes so tough if you have things like that working against you, and then you're trying to fight for that last little bit of increment of, getting a really tight group or something like that, and you can't tell if it's you or a piece of equipment or your arrow or whatever, right? It can become pretty overwhelming if you don't know what you're looking at times, for sure.
Yeah, or you're fighting yourself. You're thinking it's yourself, so you're trying different forms and different ways to hold your bow, and you're thinking about string pressure on your face and stuff. And sometimes it boils down to it's just the arrow itself. I number all my arrows as well, and whether they're spine aligned or I dock tune them, you get shooting and you'll always notice that one number arrow will be flying off high into the left or high into the right, and it's just that arrow itself. There's something not tuned about it.
No, and exactly. And you can beat yourself up for that if you don't know about it, or if you didn't number it or something like that too. But I had a pretty embarrassing night on Friday. We went out went out and shot with a buddy Friday night, and I was blowing veins off. I don't know if when I recently glued on the veins that I had in my jig, I don't know if I didn't clean them enough or what, but I don't think they were hitting my drop away rest or anything. But it was just embarrassing, because I had a couple that were like kind of dangling. I'm like, what did I do? Did I just not glue these properly? So I got a few that I got to go reback and do as we're talking about this.
Yeah.
I'm like, I did something stupid for sure. I don't know what it was, but got to redo
And sometimes there's no rhyme or reason for it, right? A little bit of grease from your fingers on the arrow or on the vein, and that's what it takes to stop it from adhering, right?
And it's either like it's never coming off, or it comes off like first shot and doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
But
Falls like a feather in the air as you shoot, eh?
exactly. So, but yeah, man, I wanted
Yeah.
to get into at the beginning of the conversation, I like to get kind of, the bio, the origin story, everything like that for you, and especially your shop and stuff too. But I wanted to go way back to, what got you into archery, whether it was a person hunting, something like that. I know you shared
Yeah,
that
you
one
bet.
post of that the old veteran bow hunters club there in veteran Alberta. So yeah, I wondered
Yes,
how that all
that
played
one
in.
holds. Yeah, I'll get to that for sure. That one holds a pretty that's pretty close to my heart on that one. So when I was I grew up with two brothers. So when we were young, this would be in the mid 80s, my dad brought home two recurves for us to play around with, and my older brother and I, that's how we essentially first got into archery. That was in Muir, Alberta, and then in the early 90s, my dad took a job down in Vectren, Alberta, or Concord, Alberta. So we moved down there, and that's where my dad found the Veteran Archery Club, or the Veteran Bow Hunters. And as a young kid, I moved straight into that archery club, and my older brother and I, we trapped beavers to save our money up to buy our first bows. And that's how the love of it all started. That archery club is the foundation and is something that I've strive for all my life to get something like that for my kids, for anybody, for everybody in the community, to find something like that, community, that atmosphere, and that vibe of that club that was just it's just a little unmatched, just one of them childhood memories that I have, right?
Man, that's too cool. So at that time, like when your dad brought home these bows, like was he hunting or anything, or was he heavily into archery, or you just thought, hey, this is something cool my kids might like, or
Yeah, my dad bought an old, I believe it was an old PSE wooden limb bow back then. And he was into archery. My whole family's been into hunting. Well, my stems back to my great grandpa, and my grandfather. Hunting's just in our blood. I grew up around it. Some of my earliest memories is me sitting in my truck with my dad on a cold November day and sitting up on top of a hill or something like that, watching for deer, right? So it's something that I've always done, hunting and fishing. It's that's how I was raised. So
And so born in
yeah, he
Alberta
brought home
then
that.
too.
Yeah, just a boring kid from Alberta, right? But yeah, my dad brought
Oh
home that
no,
wooden. What's that? Sorry, Eric.
Well, I wasn't saying boring, sorry. Born in Alberta though, like
Oh,
just typical kind of Albertan
yeah.
raising around all the outdoors and stuff, but that's cool.
Yeah, typical Albertan, right? So yeah, my dad got into archery because I think he wanted to hunt a couple more months of the year. And it just stemmed in. I don't know if my dad knew that it was gonna catch on with myself, my older brother as well, but with myself and the whole family, that it was really gonna leach into us like it did. We had heavy involvement in archery up until I was really heavily involved in the archery club up until 97, 98 after I graduated from high school, and then I got into the workforce. Into the oil field, and that's where I kind of pulled back from a little bit. I was too busy to get to really get steady into it again, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of, the tough part for sure is, like you say, as soon as you get into the workforce, you start plugging away, and then, of course, now you're, family man, you got kids and stuff, and trying to find time to
Yeah.
juggle it all and everything. And then what made you going through all that, going from, I think it's so cool, man, like trapping beavers to save up for some of your first stuff. It's way too cool.
Yeah, no.
But
Yes. Yeah, no, it's my dad ran a trap line when I was just little. Like I remember our basement being full of beaver pelts. So my knowledge from skinning beaver out and stretching them and everything come from my dad, right?
man, that's super, super cool. And really cool way of going about things. And then you get to working and everything, having a family. And then what was kind of the straw that made you decide, you know what, I'm going to open up the archery box and have at her?
Yeah, so my kids, they were into sports heavily. So archery kind of took the back burner for a little while. I was always into it. And now my daughter, she graduated from university. She's out of the house. My son turned 18 or 16. He had his driver's license. So that opened up a little free time for me. And I'm like, I'm going to get back into it. So I bought myself a new bow a couple of years ago, I guess 2.5 years ago, I bought myself a new bow. And when I got in hunting season, I was looking for an archery shop to get me a set of strings on it. It wasn't, I just wanted to get them ordered. And then after season, I was going to drop my bow off and get them put on. And it was a struggle around Central Alberta. I couldn't find anybody that that was offering that service to do that. It was just a blank. I either had to travel to Edmonton or Calgary, drop my
Yeah.
bow off for a few weeks, and then go back up and pick it back up. And that just wasn't, I wasn't comfortable with that. I didn't have the time. My weekends are very precious to me. So that's where I kind of made a couple phone calls. And my first phone call was to PSC Archery. I left my name and number on a weekday, and all of a sudden on a 8 o'clock on a Thursday night, I'm getting a phone call from Tucson, Arizona, and it was the PSC rep for Western Canada. And that's how it all started. He basically said, if somebody put their foot forward to start an archery shop up in Central Alberta, he goes, we would be happy to help him out because that gap needs to be filled. And we just took it and ran with it. We never let go, and we kind of bulldogged it. That was in mid-September, and by December 3rd, we opened the shop up.
Wow, that's crazy, man. That's wild. But like you say, yeah, that gap needs to be filled. And then, I mean, I know, man, I don't even live that far from, north side or like northeast side Jimbo's in Edmonton here. Like, I'm over in Strathcona County in Sherwood Park. And that's, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's still a good like half hour, 45 minutes, depending on the traffic kind of thing. But even then, I'm like, real, sometimes I'm like, I don't even want to go over there and bring it over there, not for any reason against it by any means. It's just like you said, it's just time is precious, especially when you got kids or family and all the stuff you want to do on the weekends, right? And it's like, yeah,
Yeah.
and then leave it with them. And I could only imagine, like, that's a couple hour drives either way for you, right? So not only is it the drive that
Yeah.
takes time, and it's the not having your bow and shooting it that takes the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And to say that it wasn't always a dream of mine to have
Yeah.
an archery shop would be a lie. I've dreamt about this since the late 90s, to be
Yeah.
honest with you. It's been something that I've, to say the least, I manifested it. Like I this is what I wanted, my bucket list. And finally I just said, you know what? When that opportunity came about, that's when I said, you know what? You're only asked once, right? So
Yeah, man. I don't know if it, I can't remember the quote I just read somewhere, and it's like, it's kind of corny, but it's like you get to live twice or something, and it's like the second time comes when you realize you only live once or something, where it's along the lines of, is once you
yeah.
realize you only have one life to do things, you decide, okay, well, I'm gonna
That's
do
when
something with it, right? So, but
you start living, that's correct.
yeah, well, oh, that's cool, man. Good for you. That's way too cool. And I love the archery box, like just the interior. Like, I got to come in and make a stop in 100% when I'm down there. Like, and you're not too even far from me either, really. But just the atmosphere that you create through the shop there is just very, I don't know, trying to kind of paint a picture of it in the intro where you just got this wood stove going. It's just a beautiful like cabin feel where, yeah, it's got everything good about hunting and everything good about archery in the same location. And I mean, the stuff you're carrying is like flagship from, Bowtech, PSC, Hoyt. Like, you've got incredible gear in your doors there, right? For, like I said, world-class gear for people to get their hands on, try out, and everything like that. And yeah, it's just
Yeah,
phenomenal to see.
the coffee on the coffee, the smell of the coffee over the wood stove that's percolating, and just the whole atmosphere, the community. That's what my dream was, to form something like that. The culture of it, the
Yeah.
culture of it is, it's not that it's dying, but I want, when my kids, we I had my kids into archery when they were 4 and 5 years old. I got them both in, and we used to travel up to Millet, to Pipestone Creek Archery, and the culture that Jim had in that shop was by far none one of the best cultures. He got my kids hooked on archery. It was just an awesome experience, and that's what I'm trying to not mimic it, but I'm trying to get my own culture to feel like that, you know, feel welcome to come in. And we do stock all the high-end, the Hoyts, the Bowtechs, the PSE. We do stock all that stuff, but I don't want people to get the presence that, we don't stock the entry level stuff that you can start from $450 and work your way up and get into
Absolutely.
archery. Like, that's, anybody can get into it. People have a misconception that it's a huge investment, and you don't need a huge investment to get into archery and enjoy it.
No, and it's true. And there's something to be said about that, because, like, even when I started, right, I didn't go in with a huge investment, and there was absolutely nothing wrong with taking Western big game animals with that gear either. You don't need to, spend over $1,000 to be able to have something that's ethically effective, So, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, don't I and I the biggest thing is I take the time with people that come in my shop. I just don't give them a bow and kick them out the door. I'll spend time, first time shooters, I spend a good hour with them to get their form correct, get their peep sights and everything set, so that bow is tailored to them so they can enjoy the sport, the most that they can. I don't want, I guess the thing I hate is I don't want somebody to walk out the shop and on their own and try to experiment of archery, because that's what kills the interest in it. They had an interest in it, so if you do it properly with them and they have success, whether it be hitting a balloon or a bullseye or hitting what they're aiming for, that's what really grabs them and gets that addiction going into archery.
Yeah, and I think, that's really cool, 'cause to look at from what you're saying, from like the guys back in veteran when you're growing up and like the bow hunters club there, like you said, it brought that sense of community, and same with Jimbo's and stuff too, right? Bringing that sense of community and that sense of you can come in, people are willing to show you, you don't need to be intimidated by it, right? And same thing, like you say, you don't need to feel like you need to totally break the bank to get into it or anything. And then like you're doing with your arrow building workshops and stuff too, right? It's like you say, you don't want to like hide that information from people, because that's people intuitively want to understand how the how, like what how what they're using functions, or like how, if I think that makes sense, but or how the things function that they're using. And when they can, I think they would see you more that way, as like a mentor, like you're saying, like you're not only a shop owner and you can set people up and get them out the door, but they can routinely come back to you and ask you questions or give you a phone call and, hey Chris, I got this going on, anything you'd recommend, or bring it by the shop, take a look at it or something, right? And that builds that community, like you're saying, right, where it's bouncing everything off of each other and making sure everyone's having a good time and enjoying it. That's awesome, man. It's cool.
Yes, and spreading the knowledge too, right? Like it's just some, the more knowledge I think that I can spread about it, the better I can make everybody better at it, right? I want everybody to enjoy it. One thing that we did in last year, I kind of put my foot forward, and it took a whole group of us to get it going, but we got the Ponoka Area Archers Club going
Nice.
here at the Moose Hall at Ponoka, and that's the culture in that is, we started April 3rd was our opening day last year, 2023, and we have over 100 members in that club already.
Yeah, that's huge. That's especially because so many clubs are having troubles after like pandemic stuff, right?
That's right. Like there are a lot of clubs shut down, and it's sad to hear. I see a lot of outdoor, like hunting and fishing shops closing their doors, right? After COVID, it's just stuff happened and they and compiled on top of them, and they just the bills stack up and they can't make it, right? So
Well, that's rough for sure, but it's awesome to see guys like yourself getting back out there and, like you say, putting that foot forward to rekindle all the community and everything to get back together and enjoy it. But
yeah, getting everybody out, because everybody's so used to being in there, after COVID, everybody's so used to being in their houses, getting everybody back out, forming that community, forming that the bond between people. And so humans are a social being that, the more social you are, the happier you're going to be, right?
no, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was probably the toughest part about everything, right? Like, was that social element. Yeah. But, and then,
That being said, coming through COVID with shops shutting down, we're doing the archery box isn't just going to be the archery box either. Well, it will be the archery box, but we're making sure we're diversifying it. So, if archery is not going to be the breadwinner for the shop, we're going to have something else to keep the
absolutely.
shop going. So yeah, so like we built all our own hats in-house, and now we are this is the big announcement that
Yes.
I've strived to make is we've invested into an archery simulator this year, and we're going to
No way.
strive for the May 1st to open it up, but we'll see. I haven't exactly announced when I'm going to have it up and going, but it'll be early in the new year or early in the spring anyways.
That's so cool, man. So, archery simulator, right? So, go into a
That's
little bit
right, yeah.
about what it is. I think most people know, and I mean most people that understand golf simulators know, but it is super, super cool.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a golf simulator. You're gonna have a screen you're gonna shoot at. We're stepping it up from a simulator that shoots, you have to change your tips to blunts. And everybody knows is if you change one thing on your bow, you change everything. So I want people to come in, they want them to use their field points. have their bows are dialed in the way they are, so they can use their exact setup without changing anything over, and they shoot at the screen into a target. It'll keep score. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be outside the summertime
Oh, no
with the
way.
projector. It's going to be housed in like kind of like, I guess it'd be a shed. It's going to be housed in, and you're going to be shooting outside, so you have the real feel. Like when you come out here, we have spruce trees that surround the property that are 60 to 100 feet tall.
Holy smokes.
And you're going to be shooting into the trees with this thing, but we're going to have an enclosure for it. So you're going to be sitting there, you're going to be outside. In the wintertime, I have a shop on my property that we're housing it in for the wintertime.
So cool.
So it'll be a full year-round thing.
Man, that is so cool. So, like, I've only seen a few videos, and like you said, so probably in the videos that I had seen, people were using like blunt tips like that. So it's projecting onto a surface then that is almost like, would it be like a giant wall kind of foam target that you'd be shooting at then?
Yeah, it's going to be a 4x8 target, and the
Wow.
projector will project onto it. And then it has a sensor ring that senses where your arrow hits, and it's going to keep from the program that I've been demoing. It's going to keep your score in the system. The first system we looked at didn't keep your score; you had to keep it manually. But this system, you can enter your name, and it'll
Nice.
automatically keep your score. And you can shoot darts on it. You can shoot. There's hunting simulators. You can shoot. Kind of like the paper shooting with it. There's lots of, I think there's hundreds of different games you can play on the simulator.
Yeah, that's so cool. And so I imagine like all different species of animals and stuff too, you can target and practice like where vital shots would be and stuff like that.
Yeah, moose, there's antelope, and the scene will be, the few scenes that I've viewed so far is that, a moose will come walking in, and
Oh
it'll tell you
no.
to get ready to shoot. As a compound bow, you draw your bow back, and you got to wait. Even though you got to take an ethical shot on it. You just can't take your first shot on the animal. Sometimes you got to wait for that animal to turn broadside. You got to be patient for a little bit, and it'll turn broadside, and then you only have a 1 second gap to shoot at her. And if you
Dude.
miss it, then you score zero.
That's so cool. I like again, I've only seen like a brief video of just, someone shooting it, and like you say, looks like a golf simulator. But like that kind of element, I think is so cool, not only for I think everybody for practicing, but especially like new people getting into it to kind of get that feeling of like this is what it would feel like if this thing was walking in and you have this split second time to kind of draw back, and then you're going to be holding, and then you're waiting, like you say, for that ethical shot. And then you got only so much time to make your release and make it count, right? That's super cool. I didn't realize that there was even motion to it. I just thought it would be like a picture of a moose or something, but
Yeah,
that's
I know
so.
it's actually like, yeah, it comes in and the moose will be calling or an antelope will be running, and all of a sudden the antelope will stop and broadside to you. And
Whoa.
that's when your shot opportunity is. And it's the one biggest thing is that you don't have a target to aim at. You're aiming at the vitals. There's nothing on that animal. So you're actually aiming like a real life scenario. So you're picking where your kill zone is. And when your arrow hits the target, it pauses the screen and brings up the kill zone or a score ring for you.
Man,
On
that's
it, which
so
just
cool.
pauses, it pauses the scene and shows you where you hit on the animal. It'll show a red ring where your arrow hit, and then it'll give you your score. So that's the beneficial thing that to me is because lots of times, for me, it's been a few years since I shot an animal with a bow.
Yeah.
And you can go to the 3D competitions and stuff like that, and they have their score rings. But an actual animal, the kill zone is the kill zone, and you want to have a nice ethical kill on it, right?
Yeah, and there is no X, there is no ring, like you say, right? And so I think that's a
Yeah.
super cool like feature towards it, is that there literally isn't, and then after it shows you like, well, this is what you scored. That's so beneficial for people, I think, to have that where there isn't something to aim at, where really all you are looking at is like a big blob of black hair or something, like it just moose hide,
Yeah.
pick where you're going to
Yeah.
shoot it, right? That's unbelievable. I didn't realize how like
Yeah.
in depth they got.
Yeah, I've got big dreams for it. Like it's, I dream to have a hunter, like a hunting league or a hunter's league where people come down and you shoot for score. Kind of like you have the top scorer or you keep on, you enter this tournament where you got to shoot it once every week or so. And say by the end of August, top shooter will win a prize or something, right? We'll win something, right? So.
know, and that what a great way to continue, like you say, growing the community, having people come down, everybody kind of hanging out, BSing about everything, helping each other, you know, go
Yeah.
over different shooting techniques, tuning, all this other stuff. Like, what a great way to get people together.
Yeah, and we moved towards the simulator because we've been asked a lot if we're going to be getting lanes, and it's just something that I'm interested in it, but I'm not interested in it because I'm essentially a pro shop, and I don't want to take away from my servicing in the pro shop to my customers if I have to go attend lanes or something along those lines. I don't want to continually having to go over it and continually help the lanes out, and then it sacrifices the pro shop. Where I found and I've seen that, when somebody comes into the pro shop, it's crucial that you get to them because their time is valuable as well, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see that for sure. 'Cause, and it's a lot to go over with people too. And it's hard to probably spend that amount of time with everybody that you need to and stuff too. Make sure everyone gets the time
Yeah.
they need. So.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and there is sometimes it gets overwhelming in the shop, but I guess because you've got the Alberta Wildlife Stories magazine or e-magazine now. It takes a certain level of addiction to run something and get something up and going like that, right?
Oh, yeah,
It's like
man.
it's
And
almost like you're obsessed with it.
it's funny because I've been meaning to, as we were talking here, I was like, I gotta insert this at some point, and I'm happy you brought it up too, because I really wanted to thank you more than anything too about with that for contributing. You know, it was awesome to have our tree box advertised in the first e-magazine and everything there. And I just wanted to, yeah, extend a thank you for, you know, joining in the inaugural issue of it, you know, and at the beginning of it.
Yeah, no, oh, you're welcome. No, I it's an honor actually to be asked by yourself and Luke to be part of the first issue of it. It's like I told Luke, I said, I don't even have to wish you good luck. I know you guys are going to have massive success with it.
Oh man, I appreciate that a lot. That really means a lot, especially from a guy like yourself that, you know, you're out there working hard every day. And exactly like you said, man, like you got to really love it to, you know, to put that time and effort into it, right? Because, you know, everything you're doing with the archery box, right? Like that is straight coming from your passion and love for hunting, the outdoors, archery, shooting, the community, you know, contributing to that community. Because if no one else put that step forward, we don't even know what it would look like there, right? Like, that's huge, man.
Yeah, I guess one guy made a quote to me. He said, "You need a big dreamer to run things like this. And
Yeah.
without that," he says, "they don't go anywhere." And I guess I never knew I had a passion in me the way I did
Yeah.
until that opportunity come about. And that addiction, people ask me how I do it. And it's not how I do it. It's just that addiction and obsession is there that I think it's unbreakable. I've been, people say like, "Oh, your archery shop's going to turn into a, it's just going to turn into a job." I've yet to experience
Yeah.
that it's just a job. It's not that, and I don't think it ever will be.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it's not that it doesn't take hard work, and it's not that you're, you know, it's not nose to the grindstone for you. You know, it's not that you're not putting in the hours, putting in the time, because that's something that goes without saying too, is that, like, you know, I think when to go way back, or not way back, or just to cycle to the kind of the beginning of the conversation when you were saying, like, you know, it was a childhood dream to, or like a lifelong dream really, to start a shop, right? It's like lots of people say that, right? Like lots of people will say, like, oh, I would love to have an archery shop, or oh, I'd love to you know, have a magazine or do this and that or whatever, right? And lots of people say that they would love to do it, but very few will willingly, you know, put in the time and effort to do it. And that doesn't come from a desire for wild success of money or anything. It comes from like the pure love of wanting to do it, right? Like you said, like
Yeah.
no matter what, you're gonna like, and like you said, doesn't feel like a job, right? I can just relate to you a lot that way when you brought up, you know, the magazine and the podcast, because, you know, with Alberta Wildlife Stories, it has started as a podcast, and now it's shape, or it's shaping into and shifting into just kind of a whole way of just intaking what we've got going on in this province, right? And it's out of the love of the world-class stuff we have here, world-class people like yourself, the shop you have, you know, the outdoors we have, that, like you said, trapping beavers growing up, like people around the world will travel here to see stuff like that, or see the mountains, or see the the vast
Yeah.
wilderness we have, right? So yeah, that's always
Yeah,
for
that's
us
right.
what is about sharing it. And that's just, same thing. I think both Luke and I don't know, man, how many late nights him and I had just plugging away at everything, like designing the website, building it from scratch, building the magazine from scratch. And there's still, don't get me wrong, there's lots of room for improvement. There's lots of stuff that we will be continually, chiseling away at. But man, I don't think we could even go back and calculate the hours we put into even just this portion of the project now, because we it sounds bad, right? Like in a business sense, it's like you should keep track of your hours, right? But
Yeah.
when you do it out of like your love and enjoyment and your passion for everything behind it, right? It's the passion for conservation and the longevity of things, like exactly how you put it earlier, right? Like you want to have something that your kids can be involved with, the next generation can be involved with, that people have the opportunity to, like any of that, like the opportunity to go into a pro shop, get set up, shoot a really cool simulator, get practiced up and set up for whether they want to do competitive target shooting, just enjoy it as a hobby, go hunting with it, whatever, right? It's like to provide that is huge. And yeah, if you're not doing it, it's like who's going to, right? Like it takes people like yourself, like you said, like a wild dreamer to get it done and create that as a reality. And it's awesome, man. But yeah.
Yeah, and it's always been one of my things. People have always called me resourceful, and now that I look back at it and I hear people say how what resourceful people do, when I guess the phrase would be is, if you say you can't afford it, you can't afford it. But I don't think that's ever been a term in my mind. It's always thought how it's always how can I make it happen? How can I afford it? How can I get it? How can I achieve it? And that's thinking outside the box to get to that point, right?
100%. And that's such a like inspiring thing for people to hear or to say, because it is like, and that's the same way like we look at things, and that's how I am as a person. Like I've gone past the point of being worried about if people judge me or not, if people think it's oh, a whack podcast, or I'm sure they're not going to listen to it, whatever. But the support
Yeah.
that we've gotten and everything has been like at times a bit overwhelming, right? We're like, it's awesome to have the support of people
Yeah,
moving forward.
my biggest supporter in the business is my wife. Without my wife,
Yes, that's good, man.
this wouldn't have happened. And I tell her that every day, you realize without you, this wouldn't happen. There's so much loose ends that have been, and I have to admit it, that I've neglected and left, that she's picked up and took on to carry on our family and everything. Because it's to say that I'm not obsessed with it would be an understatement. Like there's times I wake up in the middle of the night with ideas, and one of the podcasts that I listen to about business development is a guy sleeps with his notebook beside his bed because it said his best ideas are when he wakes up in the middle of the night, he has an idea, he writes it down. So that's the obsession, the level of obsession I have with this, right? So.
And good on you, because you know what, in the same way I should probably say the exact same thing, that man, I don't even think you would want to know what the website would look like had my wife not chimed in and been like, she, when I mentioned before, like I work as a gas fitter in the HVAC industry here in Edmonton for our family-based business, right?
Yeah.
And she developed like the whole website for our family business, right? And so when the Alberta Wildlife Stories website was like, when Luke and I were building that, she had the, oh, you got to do this. Oh, people will navigate a website like that. You got to put this in there or whatever, It's like, and it's, yeah, there's countless things. The same thing as like the biggest supporter too, because had she not done that,
Yeah.
man, I don't even, I probably would be embarrassed to tell you what the website was looking like when we were like our first week into it, right? But
Yeah, even boiling down to my social media, my wife gives me ideas. Hey, you should make a video on this. Or, one of the recent ones was when we did the whole kind of rearranging of our shop was I took some pictures of the shop and my wife took some pictures of me. And then she's like, you know what would be the perfect song for this video would be the Cheers theme song.
dude,
Just and it fits the atmosphere of the shop, right?
that's so funny, because it's so funny to hear that she was like the influence behind that. Because when I first saw that video and heard that song, I was like, Dude, that's so awesome. I was just like, that's such a freaking awesome song for that.
Well,
That's pretty.
I had to piece the song together. I had to cut it and put it together, but the way it worked out exactly perfect with the amount of time, like the time that it took to go through all the pictures. The last bit of it lined up exactly with when it switched to the Archery Box logo again. And I was just like, this was made to be. Like,
Yeah, meant to be. That's too
yeah,
funny, man.
it was uncanny how it worked out that way. But yeah, if my wife, she double checks stuff I post, and she's been a massive help along the way. I just without her, this wouldn't be where it's at, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, that's too cool, man. And definitely like so important to have that strong support of family and stuff like that, you know. And I don't know if Luke will want me saying this or not, but I'm gonna say it anyway. But you know, something he said is that, you know, for him and his wife, if she is like approves of something, you know, it's like, oh, that looks good, he's like, then it does for sure. Like she will be completely honest all the time, right? Like if something looks like crap, she's going to be the first one that's like, that's a dumb idea, right?
Yeah, I think, and
Yeah.
that's exactly what my wife's like. That's not good, Chris. Or that looks stupid. It's like I see it. I 100% agree now.
Yeah, and it's good, man. It's a good thing to be that, because you don't want people to just be like, yeah, that looks great, that looks great, that looks great, right? Like it's good to have that honest feedback, right? So it's funny that, yeah.
Yeah, and she's looking from a different point of view too. She looks at it like she's a viewer. She doesn't
Yeah.
look at it like if I look at something, like, oh, it looks so good, and then she looks at it, she goes, no, you need to do this different. And she's right. Like she's looking from that perspective as a viewer, that's what I needed all along, or we needed all along to succeed and get those posts out, right?
And that's probably one of the most difficult things with having that, like your business reflected through like social media nowadays, right? Or having its presence on social media is like when you're content creating, right? It's tough to, I think for anybody, whether you're creating content for YouTube, for your business, for, you know, a social media platform, whatever it is that you're doing any sort of content creation for, it's so tough to be like, what would I think this looks like if I'd never heard of it? You know, like exactly like you said, to have those fresh eyes, or for her to see that as like a viewer, right? Like it's so hard to, while you're creating it, also have that input to it. Yeah, it's almost impossible, right? Like it's so.
And it's also kind of my wife's kind of, she my wife's a shy person, and she went out and filmed herself in a video of the bow that we rigged up for her right before Christmas, I believe it was, the
Yeah, the
Eva
Eva
Shockey.
Shockey. Yeah.
Yeah, she went out and she filmed herself a video, and she completely stepped out of her comfort zone and
Yeah.
did that herself and put herself out on social media for it, which is it's awesome. Like the whole thing is, this business is supposed to be, in my mind, it's a family business. My daughter, she runs the TikTok account.
Oh, cool.
My son, he 3D prints parts. My
No
son's
way.
into archery. My daughter's into archery. Maybe not so much now that they're a little bit older. They're doing their own thing, whether it be sports and working, and they're getting on with their own lives now that they're turning to adults. But the whole family presence of this business, that's the feeling I want when somebody walks into the shop. My wife and I are there, and it's welcoming for them to come in. It's a family operation,
Yeah, man.
that's the feel and the ambiance I want of the business.
Yeah, and that's so cool. And it's just that support that really, you know, helps it strive forward completely. Like when everybody like wants to see it successful, wants to help out, wants to do part and really make it a family business that way, it's just really empowering, right? I'm trying to think of the right word.
Makes it that much easier to be obsessed with it, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, let no one saying like, oh, don't waste your time doing that or whatever. Oh, 100%. It's very motivating.
My wife and I, we still work both full-time jobs
Yeah.
and run this shop on the side. So
Yeah, man. And that's not easy.
no, it's not easy, and we want to grow to a point that we can get my wife to quit her job so she can, there's people see, I guess it's like an iceberg. They see the shop just on the surface. Like that may look like it's a lot to rent, but everything behind the scenes is a massive, it the whole thing to run a business is huge. So
No, dude.
that's the support that we need is behind the scenes. So it's going to be something that's going to turn into a more, it's going to be a massive family business. to get to that point, right? So bookkeeping, accounting, so on and so forth.
Man, and it legitimately, like, can't just do all of it yourself while working full time, you know? Like, that's even where Luke and I have gotten to, you know? Like, I've been doing this podcast by myself for near a year, and then Luke and I have decided to go at it together with the portions of, like, the e-magazine, all the online stuff and everything. Because and I told him straight up, and not to anybody straight up, like, it's, man, and like you say, like, getting into the bookkeeping and all stuff that like that, like, it is too much for one person to handle. Like, and I don't want to sacrifice any time with my son. I don't want to sacrifice, and same thing, Luke doesn't want to sacrifice any time with his daughter or his family, you know? Like, so when you spread the workload out, right, and it just makes it more achievable and just a little bit easier and more motivating to do, because you're not burnt out when you go to do it, right? It's really powerful.
Many hands make light work, right?
Yeah, exactly. Best way to put it, for sure. But, and yeah, and
Yeah.
I saw that video of, like, your wife doing that, and it's funny that you said that she stepped outside of her comfort zone, because I don't know, just seeing that, I just totally thought, I was like, oh man, this is awesome that, you know, she's got a setup talking about it all and everything, and you guys are just, like, you know, knowledgeable people within the industry talking about all of this stuff and what you like about it. I never would have thought that that was, like, a step outside the comfort zone or anything. Seemed really good, so that's cool.
Yeah, my wife, my addiction of archery has rubbed off on her for sure. She says it hasn't, but it has.
Yeah, that's, and you know what? And I'm gonna say this again, like, the traditional side of archery really has drawn my wife in herself. Like, she's super into the recurve that we have,
Yeah.
and it's so funny because, and I don't know if this is similar, but anytime I have taken my wife to the rifle range or the bow range or just any range, I don't know, like, I've heard the term, and I'm sure you've probably heard this saying before, that archery is one of those things that you only get worse at, that, like, once you start thinking about everything, you just start getting worse and worse. And I like to just
Yeah.
think that with her, because anytime I take her to a range, she's just such a good shot. She just looks at me, she's like, well, what are you wasting your time practicing all the time for? She's like, don't you see it's easy or whatever, you know? Like, even with her rifle, she doesn't great grouping the first time that she's ever, you know, shot a rifle. And I was like, this is damn embarrassing for me. This guy.
And they look at you like, what? Am I good? It's like, yeah, you're good. Yeah.
And then you,
Well, my daughter, she's always stood. She's always been tall. And
yeah.
we were going to the Oilmans in 2016, and we started to practice. So we lived in the town of Lacombe, or the city of Lacombe, and there was no archery lanes to go to.
Yeah.
So springtime comes, we head out to my uncle's house. He had a quarter section out by, or east of Ponoka. And my daughter and I start shooting. I'm looking at my daughter shooting her old diamond. I think it was a razor's edge or something like that. I'm like, shoot, it's too short for her. She's crunching her arm back. So I look, we come home and tell my wife, I said, we need to get our daughter a new bow. So my wife and I went into Red Deer and went to the archery shop there, and we bought my daughter a new bow. We set it up for my wife that night to shoot in the lanes, and my wife grabbed it, and it was her first time shooting. And I think within the first shot or second shot, I looked over at her and I had to take a picture because her form was spot on. It couldn't have got any better. I was like, what is going on? Like, there's not even any training here, and she's just a natural at it.
Yeah, that's funny. And you don't want to admit it either. You're kind of like, oh yeah, good job there.
Well, and then here we go to the archery club. So we got the archery club opened up here in Ponoka. So it's once you're a member, you can actually access the club 7 days a week,
Yeah.
for no extra cost. So my wife and I will head there on a, say, a Tuesday night or a Sunday, and we'll shoot. And she said it's not a competition, but I know it is because she's striving to shoot better than I am. And I look at how she's shooting. And it took me years to get where she's at right now. Like, she's hitting bullseyes just with every shot, and it took me years to get to that point.
You try to be like, oh yeah, she's got a good teacher or something, you know. Try to take some credit for it or something, you know. I set her bow up,
Oh
but
yeah. Yeah, I tuned your bow for you. Yeah.
try to. Oh, that's too cool, man. That's too funny. But I don't know what it is. Maybe, yeah, just women, man. They're powerful. They're, yeah, not, I have nothing bad to
More
say. Yeah.
patience.
Sorry.
Yeah, more. They have more patience than us, I guess, maybe.
Well, probably more patient, a lot, probably a lot of things. Yeah. But that's too funny, man. All right, on. So, But yeah, man, talking to you about everything, I wanted to get into, a story from some point in your life that, was really meaningful, or whether it was like a hunting story or anything that, really stood out to you, that really maybe lit this love that you have for what you do.
Yeah, my first archery deer that I
Yeah.
got, it was, this is gonna go back years. This was 1995 or 96. This was before trail cams were set. Like, this was before you didn't have trail cams. It wasn't even an option back then.
Yeah.
So we did everything. Like, you scouted on, like, you were on foot. You were scouting in May, June, July, spotted scopes up on top of hills, watching for deer sign. Like, you really learned where deer hung out in their different seasons.
Yeah.
And we put my older brother and I, we put the time in. We spotted some massive white-tailed bucks, and there was one alfalfa field that I was religious on top of this hill watching. This is north of Ettrin, Alberta. And everybody in the club knew that this alfalfa field was my field to hunt. I put so much time in watching it. And opening day of season that year, I was sitting up in my tree stand. Well, the trees aren't very tall down there, so I was up in my tree stand, and I arrowed a nice 4x4 mule buck. And the story is I sat there and I had two white-tailed does below my stand, like right below me. I could actually just about, I could throw a stick at them, just drop it, and it would have hit their backs. And they had their fawns with them. They were feeding in this deer funnel that I'd found. And I was watching him, and all of a sudden these two mule deer come kind of through a draw and up over a hill. One was a real kind of goofy 3x3, one was a smaller 2x2, and I thought, you know what? I think I was 16 years old at the time. And that 3x3, that's my perfect deer for my first deer. And I was watching him come in, and all of a sudden a big 4x4 come in behind him. And these deer were in full velvet.
Wow.
And the mule deer come in, and I'd already, back then we didn't have range finders, so we'd stepped out from the tree base of the tree, and we had rocks barking 20, 30, 40 yards. 40 yards was the longest, our bows only shot 200, and I think we chronographed my bow at 215 feet per second back then. That was at a 70-pound draw with an aluminum hunting arrow.
Wow.
And this mule deer come in, he was the last one to come in, and it was like picture perfect. Like, I just dreamed that this deer come in right at the 20-yard rock. And I stood up in my tree stand, and when I drew back, the whitetail snorted it with their fawns, and they ran over the hill. And the mule deer were looking at him like, "Where are you guys going?" And that gave me the opportunity to take a shot, and they didn't even notice it.
Yeah.
And the mule deer, he ran 20 yards and dropped like a rock. That was something else. Like, yeah, it was within, I think I was in my tree stand for an hour and a half that day when that happened. And my older brother drove me out there. I had to wait for him to come pick me up. No cell phones or anything back then, right?
Yeah. Man, that's so crazy to think about. Just, yeah. And so that was all full velvet, like you said.
Full velvet, just the tips were poking out. I do have pictures of them, and I do err on the side of caution of what I post on social media, so I just don't get any backlash. But
Yeah.
yeah, that's the most memorable hunt that I've ever had. Just the succession of that hunt, and I guess one big thing in the hole is too, is like when I'm out hunting, it wasn't my first year hunting archery either. Like, it took me a few years to get to that point.
Yeah.
And just watching deer in their natural state, like undisturbed, just being who they are, not knowing you're there, is something else too, right?
Yeah, just being like the fly on the wall kind of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
There's definitely something to be said about that. That's just so wild because, like I've chosen to stop running trail cameras just to try to put in more effort. I just never had cellular trail cameras, so I found I was like running through to check my camera too much and stuff like that and disturbing stuff. But I kind of
Yeah.
just stopped doing that. But it's so cool, even just to think about it. I don't know why that's such a little touch to that story I never really considered was just, I didn't, same thing. I didn't have a cell phone till like high school after high school, but still it was, I didn't think about at that time frame that you would have had to like deal with this animal and then just wait to get picked up and tell the story. Well, the whole time you're probably just like dumped full of adrenaline excitement. You just have to
Oh,
wait.
it was unreal. Well, the story was, is after I shot it, it ran 20 yards and dropped. But it was in, so down in Vetrin, you have willows, and there's droughts and dust storms down there. Well, it had a wallow around the willow, and when it dropped, like it ran around a willow and dropped, and I couldn't see it. So I was looking for it. I walked probably 4 or 5 miles because I and it still wasn't dark by the time I got back. I thought, man, I got a bad shot on this deer because up in my tree stand, I judged him for he was at the 20-yard rock, and I aimed high with my 20-yard. Yeah, I think I judged him for 25, so I aimed high with my 20-yard pin, and luckily I did because it went right down in the cavity of his ribs. It wasn't a pass through, but I thought, oh man, I couldn't find a blood trail or nothing. I thought I got a bad shot on him, and I thought he ran and ran and ran. And my brother come pick me up, and I said, I can't find this deer. So we went back to the club. It was club night that night. Everybody come out, and lo and behold, it was like literally 20 yards from where the arrow started. It was just like, holy man. But it's the time. I was there by myself. I was so nervous, I can't find this deer.
Oh yeah, man,
Right?
the gut sinking feeling, and you're just doing circles. Yeah. Oh, and but also,
Yeah.
you have no phone, right? And I just never, for some reason, usually that clicks in my mind as something that people never had in the past and in the short recent past. Like the 90s isn't all that long ago, although it feels like a long time with technology and everything. But
Yeah, that's
it's funny because I've had those phone calls where like I've called people and I've shot a moose and been like, you know what, like I've been tracking blood for quite some time, and it'd take a while to find them for sure, right? But you're like, you're going over these things over the phone with people, being like, oh, okay, well, what do you think, right? Because as soon as like you always take the shot thinking you're taking the perfect shot, and then as soon as you're doing that circle around the willow or whatever, right, you're thinking like, well, did I hit him here? Could have I hit him there? We're just so quick to second guess ourselves, even though everything felt so right in the moment. And obviously, you hit him with a
Yeah.
very ethical shot for him to pass so close, right? But your brain right away starts to go like, oh, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe this, maybe that. And I'm just thinking about it because
Yeah.
I've literally had those conversations with people on the phone, or they've called me, and sure enough. And then you go out there and help them find the animal or whatever, right? But without a phone, man, it's like I never thought about just how much that would suck, because you're just like, oh, just how much more internalized it is, right? Because you can't even
Well, it
talk.
gets your mind thinking. Yeah, it gets your
Yeah.
mind thinking. Because I seen the deer run, and I thought he exited to the right around this bush, but he
Yeah.
actually turned to the left and spun around a willow tree or a willow bush. And when I got down off the tree stand, because I had a self-climbing tree stand, so it wasn't like I could just quickly climb down. I sat up in my tree stand for probably 15, 20 minutes. And I thought, you know what? My dad always said, and my brother said, that once you shoot something, don't get on it right away because you're going to get adrenaline. And if it's not a great shot, they're going to jump off and run away, and you'll never find them, right?
Oh,
So I
exactly.
sat up there patiently. Okay, I'm going to get down from this tree now. So I set everything. Well, I climbed down from this tree with a self-climbing tree stand and got down, and I started looking for blood trails. And all I found was a couple little spots in one spot, and then it just disappeared. It's like, oh, it was hit him right in the rib cage. I'm like, how can there not be any blood? But now, as I get older, I realize, a higher shot, they're cavities don't drain out when you hit high on them. You want to hit low so they drain out. But with a tree stand shot, when you're going in, the saving grace of that was it wasn't a pass through, and that broadhead rattled around in his rib cage as his front leg started moving. It rattled around his rib cage, and it took out his whole front cavity, like his lungs, his heart,
Holy
his stomach.
smoke.
It took everything out. Like it was, yeah. And it wasn't long, and where he dropped, he was completely out of sight. You couldn't see him.
Wow, that's wild for sure. Yeah, and but I know what, like what you mean, because I've even had that with moose where like you can tell based on like where their footprints are that the blood is like going, like it's high, it's riding down their hide or their hair, right? Or the and then it's like dripping, like you can see where how it's like dripping in between their feet almost, right? So you can
Yeah.
tell it's like, and but then other like even where it's on the leaves, on the branches, on the trees, you can tell it's like, oh, that blood's pretty high up, like you can tell, like it wouldn't have wiped off blood on that high of a tree if the puncture wasn't that high, right? Like, so yeah, there's
Yeah, that's right.
all
Yeah.
these telltale signs and stuff, like you say. But no, oh man, that's so crazy. So what kind of bow were you shooting?
The bow that I was shooting then.
Yeah, at that time.
It was a PSE lightning fire, and it, I shot that bow. I could shoot that thing like you wouldn't believe, and I strived for years and years. I went through different brands of bows trying to find something to mimic that bow, and I finally found one this year that, or I guess last summer, that really hit the nail on the head that I could actually mimic what I was shooting with that. But yeah, it was an old PSE lightning fire. I think if I remember, I bought it at Bashaw Sports. old putt at Fashion Sports. I think I paid like $225 for this complete setup. Sights, quiver, arrow rest. Back then you didn't, it had just like the tab. It didn't have a,
A
like
D-loop.
you shot fingers with them old compound bows. But I was shooting rope release back then, and we had the three, I think they called them the 3D Rover rests. They were made by Golden Tree, I think they were. Those are the, we were shooting overdraws to shorten up our aluminum arrows and to get the most speed we could under them old bows back then, right?
That's so crazy. Yeah, I just went and looked it up when you mentioned the name too, just to see the photo of what it looked like and even the cam design and stuff on there. It almost looks like just like weird pulleys in the sense of not so much a single cam with a pulley, but yeah, it's a
Yeah.
different world at that time, and that's just
The
so
old
cool,
steel
man.
cables and going through the years, like I was to say that I wasn't an archery addict back then was would be a lie, but to see the technology grow from where it was back then to where it is now, and to grow up in that 1990 era of when all the technology of archery was really starting to form and mold to where it is today, is just that's something that I could never replace if I didn't have those memories to see that back in the 90s. And I see lots of shooters out today. One guy that I really met back in my younger days was Dan David from, or Dan Davidson, I think, from Medicine Hat. He was shooting back then, and he was an ace of a shot back then, and he's still an ace of a shot today. And I've seen him a couple times in the past couple years. So, he grew up in that era too, in the 90s, with all that crazy archery, where it was the fastest growing sport, and I think in North America at the time. And I'm pretty sure that it's got to be one of the fastest growing sports today, I believe.
Wow, I could see it for sure, but it's just so I wonder when you're talking about like all of the technology, and I mean it's when you look at a bow like that, right? Even when you look at the sights and stuff from that time till now, like it's pretty clear to see how much has changed and how many things have gotten better for sure. But like, what are some of the things that really stand out to you as like absolute game changer?
When Matthews brought out their solo cam, I believe that was in 94 or 95. I had in that the bow I moved from the Lightning Fire, I moved into a Matthews 3D Vapor back then. And through the archery shoots, if your bow breached the 280 feet per second, you were disqualified from the archery shoot. So a 280 feet per second bow back then, with that was flying arrows out. Like they were so fast back then that when you shot that speed, it was almost like unpredictable. Any imperfection in your form really showed in your shot. So, 260, 250, I think, was where most of the 3D shooters shot at. Carbon arrows were, $400 a dozen back then for Beemans. Beeman was a big name back then.
Holy smokes, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I got the 3D Vapor, and I had Beeman carbons and stuff, trying to get as much speed and out of the bow that we could. And that was when, and then 97 I joined the workforce, and that's when I kind of put archery down for a little while and took a hiatus on it. So
That's so crazy. And so now, or sorry, what were you going to say? I don't want to.
well then the funny story was is I think it was in 2004 or 2005, my younger brother gave my kids a Nintendo Wii, and I hadn't picked I put my bow down in 97. I actually sold it when I got to that age, and my brother brings this Nintendo Wii over to the house, and the kids set up, well, there's an archery game on it, and you hold the controllers just like a bow and draw back and shoot and pull the, you push the button to shoot. And I shot once, and I looked at my wife, I'm like, I got to get back into this. And
That's
that's
funny.
and yeah and that's yeah then I, right after that, I bought myself a bow, and that's got back into it, not full time. And that's what sparked the interest again. It kind of died off for a bit, and then your kids take priority because my kids are into sports and stuff like that, so they take priority, and there's nothing wrong with that. So and then now it's really grown back into my blood again, right?
Man, that's too cool. And something I wanted to touch on, I think when you were saying like just recently you got into something that you're enjoying as much, is this the RX8 that you're shooting now?
Yeah, it's the Hoyt RX8. You betcha. I'm going through. I'm doing. I'm shooting some target arrows through it right now, which I'm kind of experimenting. I still love my hunting setup, but I've always wanted to shoot a target arrow, like a 20. I'm shooting actually a Red Trail 23, Golden Trail 23, Serious Arrow through it right now. So I'm just experimenting. It's kind of a new game for me. You're playing with, you have one spine weight, but it's a 350 spine weight I'm shooting, but I'm playing with my tip weights and my back end weights to get that arrow fly to fly properly. So that's something that's kind of piqued my interest, and I'm trying to learn that, how to get them arrows to fly proper, right?
Yeah, but man, that like bourbon color, I think is what they call it, what you call it.
Yeah,
Oh, man, that's
that's
a
a nice one. And Hoyt has completely, well, I shouldn't say completely changed her draw cycle. In the past, I tried shooting Hoyt and it just didn't fit my hand. And a couple Hoyts come through my shop last year. Hoyt had asked us when we opened the shop up to, if we to be a Hoyt dealer, to get into the Hoyt brand. But it was such a big investment to get into it, that our little shop couldn't afford it. And then, this summer Hoyt called me and asked me, what do you think of the brand? And I'm like, well, I can't afford to get into it. Just a small shop, so I don't want to work off of debt. And then this fall they called me up and, they're like, well, what do you think of the Hoyt brand? I'm like, well, I said it's a long-term goal for the shop. The shop's doing fairly well. The shop was doing fairly well then. And I said, well, it's a long-term goal for the shop, but I'm just not prepared to invest in it yet. The Hoyt rep, he kind of told me over the phone. He's like, well, we've been watching you here for the last 6 or 8 months, and I've got you pinned on the map in Central Alberta to be the Hoyt dealership. And he goes, my next phone call to you, it's not going to be, what do you think of the brand? It's going to be, hey, how many bows do you want? I'm like, well, let's talk about it right now. And that's how it all sprung up of us becoming a Hoyt dealership last fall.
Nice, man. That's
It was,
awesome.
yeah. And he sent me the first Hoyt bow package, and he told me to try this bow, and I drew it back. I'm like, man, these Hoyts have really changed over the years. They feel good. The draw cycle's nice on them. They don't have a jumpy back wall like they did back 10 years ago. Yeah, and these ones really fit my hand. And I'm not biased to one brand. If it's a good shooting bow, it's a good shooting bow.
Yeah, that's fair for sure. And I think it's tough because a lot of times, certain companies and stuff want to build certain components, so it's like you got to stay within that realm, and it makes sense or whatever from a industry standpoint. But I think it's tough because there is, quite a few on the market now that are just nice and good shooting bows, but
Yeah, they're nice to hold, nice to draw. I've had a couple guys. It's the biggest thing in my shop is I don't. For sure, I'm an archery shop. I sell archery equipment, but if somebody comes into my shop and they don't need to spend that money on a bow, I'm not going to try to sell them into a bow that they don't need. I'm going to, a couple guys have come in and we basically took their bow and they weren't happy with it. I put it on the bow press and put it on my draw board and we got it tuned up, and all of a sudden, their spark and their interest in their bow that they loved 2 or 3 years ago just come back. They're like, man, this bow shoots awesome. And they're like, we're so happy we brought it to you. Like we I thought the bow didn't fit me anymore, right?
And it just needed some adjusting for sure.
Yeah, so like it's and I feel like I gain more customers that way than I will trying to sell them into something, right?
Oh, for sure. And I think it's tough too, right? Because, they do a really good job of advertising the latest and the greatest. Like, I've got a bow that's a couple of years old now, or my latest Bowtech is, I think 3 years old now, and I'm not necessarily in the market for something new, but damn, do I want something new. Like, I was talking to Tyler Slager there from Slager Outdoors, and he just got into like the Hoyt Satori for like the recurve, but then him and I got started talking about the RX8s quite a bit. And then when I seen you starting to do the review with the RX8 and set up with, it was nice to see it set up on that with the black gold sight too, and I was just like, man, that's a freaking nice setup. So yeah, it's something I definitely want to try. Like, but I have that.
I shot the Bowtech SS34 last summer, and I fell in love with that bow. It was such a nice shooting bow.
And it's tough, right? Because I was gonna say, when you get into those flagship bows, right? Like they're gonna have nice draw cycles, right? They're gonna feel good, and they're gonna have a few things that are different from each of them, right? But yeah, it gets to be tough because, like you say, a lot of them are shooters, right?
A lot of them are shooters, and the Bowtech adjustability that a Bowtech has is the best in the archery industry. the Bowtech, and I never shot Bowtech prior to last year, and I got that SS34 and started shooting, and I'm like, man, this is the bow that I've been looking for the last 30 years. Like, it was just, I just was beside myself how well it shot. I think to hear arrows at 60 yards, to hear arrows clashing together in a group, to me at the time last year was almost unheard of. I'm just like, I can't believe this. I walk up and I can pull all three arrows with one hand out of the target. And
Yeah,
I'm like,
that's wild.
this has never happened to me before. And
Yeah.
it's not a crazy, it wasn't a crazy fast bow.
Yeah.
And then last fall, I had my bow up on the rack, and I had a guy call me up, and he's like, what are you shooting this year? I'm like, well, I'm shooting the Bowtech SS34, and I never talked to this guy once before in my life. He's just heard he and he's like, and I asked him, well, how did you hear about us? He's like, well, I haven't heard about your shop, but he goes, I've heard about you, and he goes, whatever you're shooting this year, I want to shoot the same thing. I'm like,
Yeah.
oh, okay. So he's like, rig me up the exact same bow that you're shooting. So I rigged up the exact same bow that I was shooting for him. It was in a different color. He come into the shop and he shot it a couple times, and he looked at my bow and he's like, I like the green. I'm like, okay. And he looked at me, he goes, I'm hitting elk hunting here in a couple days. I'm just buying your bow. So I'm like, well, I guess I'm an archery shop, I guess, right? He's heading elk hunting in a couple days. I can't dispute that fact. So that's how that happened, and then I moved into a different bow, and
No
actually I
way.
was bowless for a while at the end of hunting season, right? So and then I moved into the Hoyt right shortly after.
Dang, that's wild. That's funny. That's too cool.
Yeah, like to me, it's different for me to have people, I guess, regard me in that sense. It's like, hey, what are you shooting? I'm shooting this. I want to shoot the exact same thing. I've never had that before in my life, that people want to. I guess I've influenced people in the last year, right?
Yeah, and it's weird when you realize that you do that too. And I don't mean weird in the wrong way, but like I've kind of noticed that a little bit with the podcast where you can like you've influenced a few people and you're like unintentionally, you know what I mean? It's not like you're going out there trying to be an influencer. And then you're like, well,
Yeah, I think
yeah.
they have respect for you, right? Like I have respect for you, like yourself and Luke. Like just to know you guys, like to know you guys, like Luke's come into my shop and had coffee. To know him at a on a personal level is, and then all of a
Yeah.
sudden Luke is like, hey, I'm Aaron and I are starting this e magazine up. I'm like, oh man, that is awesome.
Yeah.
Like I and I'm pretty sure he had a hard time keeping that probably secret for a while, right?
Oh, dude. And I think I had a harder time than he did because he was the one that kept me lip sealed about it. Because, you know, and before I get too much into the story, I want to just mention that respect is mutual for sure. Because, like I mentioned to you before, seeing like the Archery Box logo, like when I first started to see when you brought the shop on like just over a year ago there and you started sharing everything from it and starting to see the logo and everything. I was just like, man, this what this guy's got going on is super, super cool. And that was before the podcast and stuff, right?
That's
And
awesome. I
ever since
appreciate
I
that.
oh for sure, man. And it's cool to finally talk to you, right? Because for a long time I just watched what you're doing and was like, man, this is freaking cool. And again it came from that like the overall presentation of it, you know, like the cabin look, the wood burning fireplace in there. I was just like, you know, this place looks freaking awesome. The guy looks very knowledgeable and everything there too. And then, you know, to go back to what you're saying with like Luke and not having a tough time. And then even farther back when you were saying, you know, people don't know like what goes on behind the scenes and stuff, right? There's so many times that I wonder, you know, like we were working on that. And I mean, don't get me wrong, we hammered it out and just a couple months kind of thing. But when he would have approached you telling you about it and everything, you know, the cogs were turning, we were starting to work on stuff, everything was going, but we weren't so like, you know, guys like yourself, writers, advertisers, like everybody had the inside scoop that was a part of it, right? Obviously,
Yeah.
right? But it was just like, other than those people, like the general listenership of the podcast, I'm pretty sure had zero idea, right? Until
Yeah.
literally on Friday, we were just like, oh, yeah, by the way, we got a website and a magazine, you know? And it's so hard to
Yeah.
like not spoil it, like even have all these. I think because we looked at it, I think I did four or five podcast episodes from the time that we started talking about it to the time it was released. And all of those episodes, it was even so tough to like, I think I had conversations afterwards, like post-recording where I was like, oh yeah, this is kind of what we're up to, just so you know, or whatever, right? If you want to write or something.
I
But
didn't save the message from Luke, but I missed his phone call the day that he called to ask me to if I wanted to get an ad in the eMag. And I think it was, "Hey Chris, give me a call back. I got something big and I want to talk to you about it." And I'm like, oh man.
That's too funny. And it's just, we were very stoked, right? Like we've it's same kind of thing, right? We're just two blue collar working Albertan dudes that were stoked to put something together and put it out there with the tools and utensils we have of the modern day world, right? But it was funny to not tell anybody, because I'd think even nowadays, like I have a tough time with my son not even telling him like what we got him for his birthday. And I think like
Yeah, for sure.
Luke and I had everything done on, I think, because we were like, man, we set up a little bit too late of a deadline for advertising. We're like, hey, for the next one, we got to like make the deadline a little bit less so we don't have any like last minute stuff. But, we just didn't want to be too stressed in that in the last week before launching it. And like we were totally done everything and it was all good, and we weren't really at all. And I think it was like Monday that like literally all the T's were crossed, all the I's were dotted, and we were sitting on that reel, like that video that we shared, right? Like we recorded that thing and put it together, I think, on like Monday. And we went through like 3 or 4 days of just being like me being like, Luke, do you want to share it today? And he's like, no, dude, you said Friday. We told everyone March 1st, like leave it. And then like Wednesday rolls around, I'm like, let's just tell everybody now. And he's like, no, dude. So it was just funny. Because yeah, like you say,
That's
it's hard to
awesome.
keep it under wraps. And yeah, I think like, not a lot of people knew on the back burner. Same thing, like with the archery shop that you're running, right? Like not a lot of people know how much work goes into just having it there for the access for customers to check out, see, and get set up at. And same thing behind the podcast. Like, yeah.
The biggest thing
But
with the archery shop is getting your name out, right? Like there's still lots of people in my area that don't know there's an archery shop local for them. It's the biggest thing. But I guess, moving back to, keeping everything under wraps, it's not, you don't want to reveal your next move until you've made it or you're making it, right? You don't want to
Exactly.
reveal it too soon in case it goes sideways on you and something happens and you can't get it up and going.
No, and that's just it for sure. And that was exactly the same thing, right? Like it's, and waiting sometimes is better too. Like even though we could have revealed it at some point, it's still waiting for that moment made it that much more kind of bittersweet or whatever. But yeah, it's exactly like you said. It's hard to keep it under wraps sometimes, but yeah. And I think it's awesome, like, giving out the reveal of what you're doing with the shop this year with the simulator and everything is so flippin' cool. 'Cause I actually don't know if there's a simulator in Alberta anywhere.
There's not, and there was one up in Spruce Grove, but it was done years and years ago, right? So I tried to contact the old owners to see if I could get a hold of that machine, and I could never get a hold of them. They were I don't I It's almost like they've dropped off the face of the earth.
Yeah, just something, but
Since I don't you know when I opened the shop up last year, I guess I worked the oil field full time, and I've been in sales for probably close to 15 years. So one of the biggest things in oil field sales is networking. You network with other people, network with other salesmen. That's how sales work. And I think I'm one of the only shops in Alberta that I called Jimbo's up and I spoke to Jimbo's, told him I was opening a shop up. They congratulated me, and I went up and seen Cal at Wildside Outdoors up in Lloydminster. I've talked to all the other shops, and with one shop they told me that no other shop has ever contacted them to talk to them.
Wow, that's wild to think about. But and but you know, I think it's funny. Sorry, go on.
I guess it, and I'm you know since then I started working with Bashwood Sports. They have archery, so I've helped them out in a sense of like they'll sell the bows and they'll bring them to me, or the customer will come to me and I'll set the bows up for them, right?
Yeah, that's super cool. And it's funny because when I think about it, I try to think when you're talking about, with the networking and how you've done with like the archery box with the word getting around and spreading. And I mean, social media is a huge tool nowadays for just that within business. But I can't remember exactly when was the first time that I heard of the archery box, because I just remember, I think like it just became recognizable, right? Like between the logo and the setup that you have. And I think that was like one of the coolest things that it was just like, it's so recognizable. It's not just like another shop that just has bows hanging on the wall, right? So it was like, at some point I remember seeing the logo in a video and I can't remember, but it had to have been through social media that I'd seen it. And then it was just through like the repetition. And it was like someone made a post and I seen them tag you or something, and where there's like a clip of them in the like in your shop, and then it just kept seeing it, and I'm like, man, where is this place? Who is Chris? Like, who is it? And it just like it started giving me more questions, and it works really good that way, right? Because it piques that interest where you're like, you want to know more, right? Like, so
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
yeah, whatever you're doing, it is definitely working for sure, because it's
Yeah,
come up multiple
I love
times.
this. Yeah, I love the social media. It was
Yeah.
definitely stepping out of my comfort zone. And when I first started posting, or I shouldn't say posting videos, when I first started recording videos, I'd use my phone to record them, and to record the first video was 250 some takes to finally get it right.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
My wife used to bug me, "Oh, Chris is going out to the shop to make a video. I'll see him in a couple hours."
Yeah. It's so
Over.
funny though.
It had to be perfect though for me, right? I just couldn't let anything slip by, right?
Oh, for sure. And it's, yeah, there's something about it, 'cause right, like, man, I feel the same way for sure when it comes to like filming ourselves doing things. I think that's maybe Gen Z or this next generation that has just grown up doing it, so they have no problem sticking a camera in their face and being like, what's up
Yeah.
you guys? It's like we go to do it, or I go to do it, same thing. I'm like, oh man, like, oh, and we're our own worst critics, right? So
And I see the videos, like I look at my first video that I made and posted, and how more comfortable I'm getting as
yeah.
I'm making more and more videos, right? I'm getting more comfortable with myself and everything, making them videos, right? So
Well, it's funny because I never would have guessed those are the 200th take, because I've always, when I've seen it, you just always look naturally like, I'm just going into the shop for the day. What's up? You like talking about this and that. And it just always looks so chill. So yeah, if you told me that was that many, I was like, I would never have even guessed, but
I guess, I'm my own worst critic too. I'll
cool.
do a take and I'll watch the video. It's like, oh, I said this wrong, or I said or I said something wrong, right? So
Oh, for sure, man. That's too funny. So
but
going
yeah,
in.
the feeling,
Sorry, go
go ahead.
on. Nope, you
But
go.
coming out to the archery shop here, like, we had a last August, I was helping a gentleman broadhead tune his bow, and I had a couple customers in the shop, and this little girl, she said, the door was open. It was a hot August day. Like it was hot in the shop. The door was open, and this little girl, like outside the steps, you could only see a couple yards off the deck of the archery box, because there's a bush in front of it.
Yeah.
And she goes, "Oh, look, a moose." I'm like, "What do you mean a moose?" Like, she's like, "Well, yeah, there's a moose." I look out the front door, and there's a moose standing right by the steps of her shop. Like
Is that
it
when
like
you took
right.
that picture?
That the customer actually took that picture. He was broadhead tuning, and he stood behind the target because his moose come out as he was pulling his arrows, and he stood up and he's like, "Uh-oh." That bull
That's
moose
crazy.
was sitting there staring at him at 3 yards away.
That's too funny, man. That's
Yeah, so
crazy.
it's the atmosphere out here, and literally like that one, I was target practicing with my bow, and there was two whitetails bedded 20 yards away from me in the trees as I was target practicing with my bow. And ducks are continually landing in our yard and stuff like that. It's just the feeling out here and the atmosphere out here. Squirrels running around, dropping pine cones or spruce cones on top of you as you're shooting your bow. It's quite comical sometimes.
Yeah, it's very, you immerse yourself in that nature that, yeah, you might be very well hunting right in. Yeah, that's so cool. But
So, but there's lots of moose around here. That's one thing. And moose, since we moved in here 4 years ago, moose have been like, it's something that I've grabbed onto. I don't know what it is. The moose has just symbolized, I guess, I don't know, maybe myself. I see myself in a moose, I guess. But you come out here, we have a moose, stained glass moose hanging in our house, and it just seems like
cool.
everything revolves around moose, right?
Man, that's super cool. I really, I'm really into that kind of stuff. And yeah, it's cool that, thinking about what that could embody or picture, right? It was like, man, there's a lot of energy behind that animal, like very motivated. Yeah. Very like, yeah. Steadfast, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah,
cool.
we've even, at one point, we were even calling our place Moose Acres
That's cool.
when we first moved in here. Yeah, just there's, yeah, there was just, it's always been moose around here. It's always been wild. I know there's been some neighbors that don't like them. They are pretty destructive, right? They're ripping fences down and
Yeah.
stuff. But just to have that in our backyard
Yeah.
is unbelievable. It's, I guess, a privilege to say the least, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, it is for sure. And it's wild how big of a creature can also be so quiet and like just sometimes, like, 'cause we get them a lot in the bow zone where I hunt too. And, but man, you hardly see them. Like, there's still a ghost of a forest, no matter how much, like you say, destructive or
Yeah.
like you'll hear them hunting and they'll be coming through the woods like a train sometimes. Don't get me wrong, but
Yeah.
sometimes they sneak up on you and you're like, man, how does that thing get through being so quiet in the city that is even in know they're 5 minutes outside of,
Yeah.
yeah,
Yeah.
society?
We had them three moose late last December or no. Yeah, it was in December, I think it was. Or maybe even January. It was in January. They were in our yard and they were sparring these three bull moose. And one of them was already missing his pan. So then, as soon as I see that, I'm like, I'm on a mission. I want to go find this because they say where they drop one, the other one's dropped usually within 100 yards, right? So I'm like,
Wow.
that pan's got to be around here. So I'm going through the trees back here and I'm walking through where these moose went. And
Yeah.
I'm just like, how did these moose get through this stuff? Like, I can't even crawl over these trees
Right?
and go through them. Like, how are they traveling through this?
Yeah. Oh, we have that
Yeah.
too, and it's just
It
so thick.
Yeah, and some of these logs are like some of these logs are four, they're suspended 4 or 5 feet off the ground. Like, moose are tall, but an Alberta moose isn't that tall where they can just step over it. It's like, how are they moving through this stuff so quietly that you don't even hear them?
Right? Yeah, it's something that
Yeah.
blows my mind for sure. Yeah, that's
Yeah.
crazy.
Yeah, and then even the Pinoca Archery Club is at the Moose Hall. So that's where that sits, and then we just the club has just formed the youth team, and it's the junior mooses.
That's too funny.
Yeah, so that whole moose thing, it just kind of revolves around our life now, right?
That's so cool. That's so cool to think. And then, yeah, the ad that you just ran through the magazine, two moose right on her. And like, yeah,
Yeah.
that's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so
Man.
yeah.
But yeah, coming up here in the remainder of 2024, what, I mean, that's a big thing is the simulator, but what else are your goals for the shop or hunting or anything out in 2024?
I'm really looking forward to this fall, this year. My son had a bad turn of events this year. He injured himself, so he was
Oh.
trying out for AAA baseball. So last fall was completely it turned 180. I was planning on getting some good hunting time in, and he got in on an invitational-only baseball team. So that kind of cut my hunting season short last year.
Yeah.
But this year, he's going to university, so I think I get a little more time to myself this year. So I'm really looking forward to this fall. To archery hunting. That's to go
Nice.
sit in my blind or my tree stand and get some time in something that I haven't done in a few years, dedicate myself to do that more often.
Yeah, that'll be nice, man. And I'll be watching. I'll be looking for pictures that that RX8
Yeah.
leaned up on something.
Yeah, hanging from a tree and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I guess one of the best rewards of my One of the best rewards of my archery shop was when my customers text me a picture of their success.
Oh,
I
dude,
just,
I could. Oh, I didn't even think about that, man. Yeah.
yeah, we want to, we are going to make a wall up with our customer success. We're going to call it the Wall of Success,
For
and
sure.
we're going to have the pictures of them with their deer. We've asked all of them if we can, and they've all agreed to. But yeah, when they get an elk or a deer or a moose, whatever they're killing, like they're texting us because they're proud, right?
Oh,
And
for
lots of them are
sure.
texting me, thank you so much for working on my bow. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, man.
Just that, right? It's just like I'm just beside myself how many people that I've helped out, and they just appreciate it, right?
Oh, dude, and it's such a like fundamental human experience through hunting that when they like when you go through those moments, man, like you've impacted people's lives into, creating lifelong memories, like hands down, right? Like I thought that too about the first couple people that helped me with archery stuff. I was like, man, I gotta thank those guys because that was a life-changing moment, and you don't forget those moments, right? Or the people that set stuff up like that for you, right? Like.
Yeah, or even like, going to the club. Like, so we have club nights on, excuse me, we have club nights on Monday nights at the Potomac Archery Club, and I'll go there. I'll take my bow, but majority of the nights I'm there and I help guys out with their form or help kids out, or if they need a repair on their bow, I'm there. I'll help them fix their bow, or if I see, if I see one of them like, something that can improve, I'll go over and talk to them. And I had a couple parents, I go talk to their kids because they say the kids are punching their trigger or they're holding their bow wrong, and I'll give the kids a few pointers and hinters of how to do things better, and their parents thank me. They're like, "Man, thank you so much for helping our son or helping our daughter," because they just don't listen to us like they listen to somebody else, right?
Yeah, for sure. And especially a guy that's like owns a shop, right? That's like, yeah, this is what you're doing, right? Like,
Yeah, and
the
it's not, I just want everybody to enjoy the sport. That's the biggest thing is I just,
yeah.
I don't, I would, I see so many, I see a few people that go and they get so discouraged because they've had no guidance to the sport.
Yeah.
And if you just guide them and help them point them in the right direction, they completely turn a 180 and they get fully immersed in it, right?
Yeah. Oh, that was me in my youth for sure. I was shooting a compound bow with fingers that was probably almost dangerous at that time. Should have had a D loop and stuff. And yeah, I
Yeah.
don't know. And yeah, nobody really kind of stepped out and showed me much. And I like same thing for myself, put it down for some time. But yeah, something as little as that could yeah, turn around someone's enjoyment. And like you say, as long as they're out there
Yeah.
and enjoying it, that's like the best intention you could have out there, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I know lots. I know like for myself, I use it as a stress reliever too. If I
Yeah.
get stressed out, I'll go out and I'll pound arrows for 15, 20 minutes out at the target, and then it's almost like you don't think about anything else but
Yeah.
shooting, right?
Yeah, it's very meditative. Yeah, you can't, right? Like, 'cause then your form gets or your shot gets off. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So there's lots of times I go use it just, I'll go and shoot for early morning. I'm an early morning person, so I'll go out and shoot early in the morning.
Yeah.
And just the stress reliever, just the stress that it relieves, that you don't have to think about anything. There's nothing else on your mind but shooting, right?
Yeah.
But archery at the time.
Yeah. I'm
So
the
I guess
same
it's
way.
almost like fly fishing, I guess.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. And it's an early morning thing. Yeah. I'm not too much of, I'm like somewhat of an early morning person for sure, like with work and stuff. But man, as soon as that sun starts rising early, like in the spring and into the summer, like, oh man, if I can shoot before work stuff like that, like I'll get up and get out there an hour early just to yeah, put some shots through. So yeah, same thing. That's
I
peaceful.
guess lots of times with me too, when I get a free day, I don't want to sleep in and waste it either, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's very fair for sure. I mean, I can't sleep in now with a kid, like, 3-year-olds, right? There's no sleep in
Yeah.
with 3-year-olds.
I
Yeah.
know what that's all about. You've been up
Yeah.
a couple times sometimes in the middle of the night, and then they're up early in the morning too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You don't get to, yeah, plan that at all anymore. But yeah.
No, yeah,
Yeah.
but li live it up because it goes by so fast.
Oh yeah, that's the truth, man. It feels like sand through the fingers at times because even right now I'm just like, man, I'm trying to soak in every moment I can because yeah, it's you can already tell like it's
Yeah,
only three, but it's already three.
my wife and I look at each other. We're like, we had kids at a younger age. Like I was 20, my wife was 21, and I was 23, 24 when we had our daughter. And
Yeah.
I look at her now, I'm like, hey, you do realize next fall we're empty nesters,
That's
right? So it's just
crazy
like,
to think about, yeah.
where did the time go, right? Like, I was there with my kids in sports and I was there as much as I could. So it wasn't like I squandered it away or anything. It's just like, it was like a blink
Yeah.
of an eye, and my kids are, my boy just turned 18 here late last January. Like
Yeah.
in January, late January, January 25th, he turned 18. It's like, I can't believe my son just turned 18.
Yeah. That's so wild. And yeah, full on adult now, voting, making decisions. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
Things
right. Yeah,
surviving.
my daughter's out of the house, so we had one more kid
Yeah.
in the house, and yeah, we're empty nesters.
Yeah. But in the same instance, I imagine too, there's probably lots of how that relationship shifts from parenting to, them being adults. Like, you feel it in your own life when you go from being a kid to being an adult and that relationship you have with your parents, you'll always have and how it kind of
Yeah, that's
shifts
great.
into, yeah. And
Yeah.
there's always lots of positive there, but yeah, it's just crazy how time will just rip like that. But
Yeah, I have
Yeah.
noticed as my kids get older and have gotten older that you need to be really, you spend less time with your kids as they get older. So when they are prepared to spend time with you got to make sure your time's available for them. So it's almost like it's you got to be there available to them more as they get older. As because when they're younger, you're there for them all the time, and as they're older, you only get so many chances to be there for them. So you got to make sure you're available for them to be there, right?
That
I'm
makes
not
a
sure if
lot of
that makes
sense.
sense.
Oh, 100% it does, yeah. And I think about that even in, with my own mom now and stuff too. And yeah, it makes me reflect on a lot of things because it does for sure. And I can definitely see that because there's times too that, the hustle and bustle of life, everyone's just, can we get together for one a dinner like one night this week or something? Like, can you even get together for a
Yeah.
dang dinner, right? Like, yeah, it's
Yeah,
crazy to think about.
everybody seems to be so busy now in this day and age, right?
Oh, it's crazy. And it's a shame, right? Because that's the meaningful stuff in life, man, is the, like you say, the
Yeah.
time you spend with your family and making the time for it when you can. And yeah.
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 Money makes life easier, but it's definitely not the problem solver that everybody thinks it is.
Nope, that's the truth for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I gotta say, man, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you and yeah, having you on the podcast here. I feel like we need to do like I want to have you back 100%, probably many times, but I want to still pick your brain so much about, bow tuning, arrow tuning, setups and stuff like that. I'm pretty obsessive compulsive when it comes to archery stuff, and I don't like thinking about being out at camp one day and having to resort back
Yeah.
to running back to town to fix something, right? So I've always been trying to figure out things as best as I can, but in the same instance, take it in when it needs to be taken in. But
Oh,
yeah, I feel
100%. I
like we could.
appreciate being on this show.
Oh, yeah, anytime, man, anytime. And I just, yeah, it's really, really cool to see what you guys are doing there and big supporter of it. Love to see it. And I definitely got to stop in. I want to come in and just have a cup of coffee and talk to you in the shop for sure. And
100%.
see everything in person, and especially man, when that simulator gets going, I'll be down there trying it for sure. That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome to hear. And looking forward to having you down here. And I thank you for having me on the podcast. And yeah, it's an honor to support you and Luke in the E Magazine and everything going forward. And with your archery shoot coming up this July long weekend, yeah, I
Yeah.
can't wait for it.
Oh, thanks, man. That means a ton. And we'll definitely be talking to each other many times in between podcasts, but we'll have to have you on again soon.
I look forward to it.
Okay, well, thanks again, Chris. You have a great night there, and yeah, we'll talk to you again.
You as well. Thanks, Aaron.